Hey friends, welcome back to Cheological. I'm sitting down again with Andrew Nugent Head. This is a part two. Talked to Andrew originally on show number 48. We discussed the upper, middle, and lower class of herbs. Today, we're here to discuss layers of disharmony in the body with a focus on three things that we learn in our first week of acupuncture school, but I think a lot of us, we can go through years before we really understand it if we ever do. That's the Jing Qi and Shen. Delighted to have you with me again, Andrew. Welcome to Cheological.
Oh, it's fantastic to be back.
So Jing Qi and Shen, these are really basic things that we learn. I don't know about the listeners out there. I've been at this for 20 years now. I'm not sure I totally understand this stuff. It's like every time I run into it, there's a part of me that is questioning. There's a part of me, sometimes in clinic, I'll be sitting with people and something comes through and I go, there's an aspect of Shen right there. Or here's something. I wonder if this is essence. I wonder if this is what they're talking about. So I'm really looking forward to getting your point of view. You know, you spent a lot of time in China. You've spent a lot of time in Chinese. Really interested to hear what you got to say about this stuff.
And what I'd like to do is, you know, given that we do live in a time now where people can access the older books much more easily than when I got going, you know, now there's C-text and all sorts of things. I'd like to really make this clinically focused or relevant to treating patients. And to do that, in one of the long-term courses I teach, there's a module where we talk about how do we awaken the Yuan Qi in the body. But before we can even talk about Yuan Qi, we talk about layers of disharmony. And that's understanding where is the illness. And of course, an illness can be across lots of layers, but there's going to be a principal place of the illness. And it's more than just talking about the San Jiao or the six channels or anything else like that. There's a layer of depth. And when I break it down, I break down that we can look at layers of disharmony as we've got the 10,000 collaterals, or basically all the collateral network. Then we've got 12 channels. We've got seven emotions. We've got the six Fu, the five Zang, and then what I call the three of change. And I've made that up in teaching. But the three of change is the Jing Qi Shen, and that axis of how those three work together. And all of those are above, and that's a terrible word, like we said last time in that last interview, that danger of above, below, all of that. But the Yuan Qi, which is the source Qi.
Right. So we're not saying it's better or worse. We're simply talking location.
Location. And that's, yes. And that location, we have to make sure that we grasp that it's a chapter one Tao Te Ching location of Ming Ke Ming Fei Chang Ming. And so if we lock it into giving it a name of like, it's a collateral condition, then we're going to get it wrong. But if we can realize that we're seeing the illness at one of those locations, or there's a dysfunction at one of those locations, then we can really up our ability to be more effective. And I always stress that, you know, it sounds like it's surface to core, superficial to severe, but that's not the case. You know, a channel condition is very serious or fatal, and a source condition, a Yuan Qi condition, can have little dramatic effect on daily life, though it may kill you in 30 years. So, you know, we definitely want to say that we don't want to stress it as severity, and yet it's going to sound that way a little bit as we talk about it.
Okay, point well taken.
Well, we might as well stop right at the top, which is what I call the Wan Luo, or the 10,000 collaterals. Basically, just what we all learned as that network that runs right across the surface of the body, that's the communication of everything in the body. And when we talk about the collaterals, we really have to understand the difference of deficiency versus excess. And if we could just view it as those collaterals are supposed to be full of qi and blood, qi and fluid, yin and yang, basically. And are they too swollen, or is there not enough in them? And so they're too thin. They don't have enough oomph in their flow. And really, that's a collateral condition. And so, you know, if we look at someone like a good concrete example of a patient comes in and they have hard acne, you know, that really painful kind. If they try and pop it, something may come out, but it just stays there and it doesn't heal. If we're not careful, we might end up missing that it's a collateral issue, as opposed to thinking it is damp heat or, heat in the blood. And the example I use is a little bit like if after a storm, you know, the ocean washes all that seaweed up onto the beach, but then the waters recede and that seaweed is left up there. And if the waters could just get up and bring it back into the ocean, the seaweed would be happy and we would be happy. But instead, it's left there and it just rots and ferments, and then your beach smells terrible. And that sort of harder acne is often like that, where something has happened to push things to the surface, but there isn't enough flow in the collaterals to wash it back into the body and take it away. And so it just sits up there and it festers, and like a bed sore as well. And it's one of those strange things where the best treatment for that kind of acne, of course, based on diagnosis and everything else, but frequently using fuzi or mahuang in a formula or something that's going to really go to the surface and seemingly be hot, acrid, and bad for acne, actually washes away that acne because we've pushed the tide up with the stimulation of the herbs or with working our points that really flushes the person. And then it brings back the debris back into the body to be washed away. You know, it's an idea of the collaterals are this, is there too much pushed in or there's not enough getting there?
That's a really interesting point of view. First time I've heard this. I think of that damp heat, or I think of heat in the blood, you know, or some dry blood or something like that. And to think about just rising up the tide, bringing some fluid and some chi up there, and then actually metabolizing it out through the interior of the body.
Yes. I mean, I when I'm talking to patients and they're having a trouble grasping it, I say, imagine there's a bunch of dirt in your driveway and you've got a hose and the water's coming out with no strength. How are you going to wash it away? You need the strength of flow to wash it away. And that doesn't mean all acne, of course, but it's important to recognize when something is that way. You know, I spent 2 years at the Quanjie, the Beijing Zhongyi Yiyuan, the Beijing Hospital of Chinese Medicine, in the dermatology department. And it was amazing how often I would see the same formulas written again and again and again, even when the person was different. And it's so deadly because when you have 30, 40, 50 people in a day, and you follow 4 or 5 rote formulas with minor variations, you know, 10 or 15 of them are going to get better. And that's exciting. At the end of the week, you've helped 50, 60 people, but there's 250 people you treated, or a whole lot who would have benefited from thinking a bit more about qi and blood as opposed to theory. But let's not get distracted on that.
No, let's not get distracted. But I do have one question. Well, you know me, I probably have more than one question. But for this kind of acne, what are some other signs that you would see that make you go, oh, this might be one of those mahuang situations? Is there something with the pulse or the quality of the skin or the tongue or something else that makes you go, oh, let's use some mahuang here?
Well, I mean, it's not fair to stereotypical the comment, but usually this acne is mostly going to be in female with poor menses, painful menses, cloudy menses. Mm-hmm. There's lots of signs that in Western medicine, the hormones are out of balance.
Right. Patients will often say. They'll say it's a hormone-related acne.
It is. And so if you were to balance the hormones, and so you had some tusidzi and some yin yang huo, and I don't use a lot of dangui today because it's what I call a cash crop. Chai Hu, Huang Qi, Dang Gui are cash crops. There's so much money being made on them that they're sped grown like tomatoes in the supermarket. So I don't expect it to do much, even though it has a great reputation in the past. So I'm always looking for other ways to get into the blood besides an herb that was speed grown like a tomato. So I will look to balance out that yin side or the hormone side, and then I will help the tides move through. And by doing that, I'm really able to very quickly affect the menses and the acne because it's really one thing. The tides of the body are just not strong enough. It's not strong enough to flush the uterus, and therefore the blood's cloudy and painful, and it's not strong enough to wash the surface. I mean, the most inner and outer of their body is not getting the deep flow.
Great. Okay. That gives me some helpful things to think about in clinic. All right. Let's continue with this.
Right. So just real fast, the opposite of that would be a pressure cooker that's so full you have to vent. And that's if the person's heat or chi is running so amok that you'd need to vent from the collaterals. And, you know, there's lots of comments in, you know, you can now online, there's lots of comments about lore treatments. And, you know, I encourage people to read them and say, what would the patient look like? And for when it's being quoted from the Ling Shu, it's definitely talking about an excess situation where the qi is pushing so hard, even the luo have swollen, and therefore you bleed them or you draw out. And so everything has a yin and yang, whether you need to rise more to it or you need to vent from it, but it's the surface. It's the most out there. The 12 channels, of course, here, this is the bread and butter of today's acupuncture and acupuncture teaching. And we really need to think of it as the concepts of yoyu buzu, that idea of excess or deficiency, and whether it's actual or apparent. I really stress that when I teach, that just because there's excess in a spot doesn't mean there's true excess. It just could be everything's bunched up in one part. I mean, you know, if everybody's stuck in the middle carts of the subway in New York, where I was a kid growing up, all you had to do is walk to either end of the platform and get on the car, and it wasn't full at all. And that idea of just being able to spread qi through a channel is important to grasp versus draining a channel. But what's interesting is Lao Tzu really uses a character sheng, which I'll translate here as not just full, but surplus. And what's interesting about surplus is it's a positive word in English to have more of. But, you know, if we're a vessel or a container, literally a rong in Chinese, and that's another word that frequently shows up in Lao Tzu in the Tao Te Ching, this idea of sheng and rong, these containers for it.
Now, which sheng is this? Which character is this? I'm not familiar with it.
It's got a nai on top and a shui underneath. I'll send it to you.
Okay. Yeah, we'll put it on the show notes page so people can see it.
So people can see it and look it up. And so when we realize that if we have a container, and there's space is limited in the container because we are a body that's limited in space. Our stomach is only so big. Our kidneys are only so big that it's a rong that has a limit. And if it becomes filled and overflows, then either it flows out the top and spreads everywhere, or it might even burst the container if there's a lid and there's no escape for the surplus building inside. Literally, it's like if you have an old wine cellar, not today's modern wines, but an older one. And then occasionally you'll hear corks popping out of bottles because the pressure builds up so much. And that idea of being able to grasp whether there's too much in the channel, too little in the channel, or it's too stacked in one end in the head or in the feet and unable to get to the other part. You know, and so that cold or heat in the channels, Wei or Bi syndromes, all of that, you know, we could look at it as the 12 channels is the yang qi not being held down by yin, or is the yin qi not being lifted through the body by the yang? And all the symptoms that go along with that really are the bread and butter of today's acupuncture that's channel focused. And it's important because it's important to know whether we can identify whether the illness is there and not get distracted. Because, you know, if someone has a toothache that's flaring or a chronic appendix or some issue that we can attain with a channel, and yet we're doing emotions focused or zangfu focused or jing qi sheng focused or yuan qi focused treatments, it's a really indirect way to get to the problem.
Yeah, it's a real mismatch, isn't it?
It is. It's just harder, and it would take more treatments, and there's no guarantee of success. And while no one ever has a guarantee of success, if we recognize a pathway problem and the pathway is either too cold, too hot, too much, too little, or poorly balanced, we regulate that and that changes everything. Whereas the next thing we're going to talk about is the seven emotions. You know, if I try and do all the channels, but there's an emotion issue that's affecting the qi, then, you know, we're going to be out of luck in terms of channel theory. You know, and the seven emotions are interesting because I like to say that they are the most important factor on deciding our general health or illness. And that's the seven emotions. But of course, I always stress it's also incorrect to say that because the truth is whatever factor is making the person sick right now is the most important factor for that patient. And if we lose track of that and we think, well, everybody needs to have the spleen tonified or everybody needs to have the liver qi sedated or everybody needs to have the essences of the kidney or something. And we have this overall pi or school of belief that guides all of our treatments. We can really end up slowing down progress if reaching any progress at all. But that being said, the seven emotions are really big in our world. And so if we're not stuck in the freezing rain, we haven't been infected by the bubonic plague. I mean, we're not being hit by a car. We can really say the seven emotions are the most important factor, whether an illness can manifest or take root in a person. And you know, what's interesting is that when I got going in this medicine, my first teacher, Professor Wong, he really stressed the Huang Lao Zhi Shu, or the skill of Huang Di and Lao Zi, which was more the way people governed before Kong Meng Zhi Dao, or the way of Confucius and Mencius came to be. So, you know, if you do a Baidu search or even a Google search on Huang Lao Zhi Shu, you end up learning that there was a whole other method of governing based on the Nei Jing and the Tao Te Ching before there came to be what we're more familiar with today. And so Professor Wong really stressed that, and he said that the danger of the emotions is because they're not physical or tangible in terms of substance, therefore they have a much greater effect, because once something has a manifestation, it is something, and therefore it's not lots of other things. But the seven emotions, since they are formless, have a very far-reaching influence on our health, because without them having a Ming, a name, then they're able to do much more damage across many more aspects of our health than a very specific physical problem like a blocked gallbladder duct or something like that. It really is incredible because, and we won't go into it here, but everybody is, you know, it's quite clear with an aging. So anger makes the qi rise, fear makes the qi drop, sadness is grief is the lungs. You know, we have this idea of how it affects the qi, it dissipates it. Joy causes, affects the heart because it elation or it relaxes the qi. All of these affect qi and therefore affect us very deeply. What is neat, I think, these days is that I have this concept that I call, which is patient natural selection. And what happens is a patient goes in, and acupuncture today, as we talked about, is most frequently a little stimulation and then some 20, 30 minutes in a room letting things happen. And, you know, that's not going to help a lot of people with bursitis, and it's not going to help a lot of people with certain physical problems. But if the body is being affected by the seven emotions, which is so common in our very modern urban world that we live in, then they will derive great benefit from a treatment that helps balance out those emotions. And it's a pretty interesting phenomenon that you get today where the illness of the times has definitely fit the style of acupuncture today. And while we've lost, like we talked about in last time, a lot of the more acute medicine, we have gained this sort of development of balancing the seven emotions. Just to keep us on track, let's move to the six fu and then the wuzang so we can get to those essences, qi and spirit. The six fu, everybody, you know, in English, it's so hard not to put, we know the zang are the zang and the fu are the fu, but we call them all organs. And in Chinese, there's no term for organs. We say zang fu. And so we can't call them all zangs. And we know that the zang are more important from our education. We know that the zang are supposed to be shou ar bu zou. You know, they're supposed to hold and not have things move through. And the fu are supposed to zou ar bu shou. Things are supposed to move through and not be stuck in them. But it's very hard for us to grasp the concept that we are looking at hollow versus full, especially in English, again, because I eat a meal and my stomach is full, but that's supposed to be a hollow organ.
Mm-hmm. It's the organ that fills and empties, fills and empties, fills and empties.
And so when we look at a dysfunction of the fu, what I really stress is for people to look clinically is that given that they fill and they empty, are things moving through too quickly? That is, it didn't really fill up before things went out. Or are things not moving through quickly enough? They're just sitting in there and they're supposed to move and they didn't. Or is the fu itself too hot? So the stomach has heat or the intestines have heat and therefore it affects everything that passes through. I mean, how well can we digest or take nourishment when the overall environment is just too hot in there and therefore burns up or destroys certain things? Or is it too cold in the foo and therefore whatever comes inside doesn't get a chance to get burned enough or fermented? I mean, you know, you have to have a certain temperature to compost. And if your compost pile is cold, nothing happens. It just sits there or flushes through very quickly. And so if we start looking at the foo as, okay, they're describing these issues and I'm looking at the intestines or the stomach or the gallbladder, and I'm looking at these things as, are things moving through too quickly? Are things not moving through them and I need to help it? Or is the overall temperature wrong? Or in today's world and in the past, are the things going in constantly or frequently too hot or too cold or too thick or too thin? And so that's affecting the organ itself. So people are addicted to eating spicy food, or they're chugging cold beverages, or they're eating huge amounts of coconut fat because that's a good fat, or they're eating so much roughage because they think that's good for them. And the poor organ, the poor foo, is being abused by what we choose to have move through it, what it has to fill and then get rid of every time. And of course, in today's world, I've really learned to be careful about my intake about surgery, because has the organ been stapled? How many people come in and their stomach has been stapled, or their heart's been ablated, or part of their intestines have been removed, or their gallbladder is gone, or so many things which we have to stop and say, is this affecting, or is it, has the body reached homeostasis or not? But to not factor in the amount of surgeries that are physically altering our internal landscape, not good or bad, just it has to be factored in.
Right. What's the influence of these things?
Yes. And, you know, and some people do really well and others don't. And then our job is, how do we help their side effects and get them to have good energy? But if we can just, when I'm talking to patients about the foo, I say, if we can just remember that this is what we're talking about in your body, things need to go through these organs and we need to either change the temperature through your diet or through my herbs or what you're putting through them or how we're stressing them. That's very helpful, both as the practitioner to think of it as that, as well as for the patient to be able to take some self-care and go home and make some changes on what they're doing.
You know, I'm really think this can be helpful. I'm thinking for myself. So often people put things in their body and they see their body as a black box. Something goes in, something comes out. They think more about what goes in than goes out. And that transformation process in the middle, ideally, they don't have to think about anything. But of course, if they're coming to see us, there's probably something going on there. And often people think, oh, well, if I just change my diet like this or change my diet like that, according to what I read on the internet, I'm going to be better. But you're talking about a whole other level of functionality here that I think it would be helpful if our patients understood that. It would give them more options.
You know, for me, I'm a big fan of, I don't believe in alternative medicine or complementary medicine. I just believe in medicine. Mm. And, you know, one of the things is that we have our limitations today in our field due to history, practice, and maybe the field itself. But, you know, it's interesting about how many naturopaths that they'll be treating their patients and they think of all these incredible things, but they don't think in temperature the way we do. And I have found that if people just start to recognize whether they need to raise their own core temperature or lower it, not by basal, but by subjective, how they feel, or of what's going through them, so many times all of a sudden all the supplements start to work. Whereas, you know, so many supplements are either very, very cold, lots of vitamin C, lysine, things like that, or very warm, they're putting in lots of cinnamon and turmeric and things like that. And that may not fit our diagnosis of temperature. And being able to help people understand that, as well as other practitioners, you know, I spent so many years at Kuanjie sort of seeing that style of medicine while working with the old doctors. And it was always just fascinating that to have people with such intelligence, obviously, and such degrees, and then just overlooking the most common of yin-yang temperature. It was always, it's just, Kuanjie, I have fond memories of Quan Jie, not all for the reasons people might think.
What was Quan Jie?
That was the Beijing Hospital of Chinese Medicine. Mm. It was on the street that it was on was Quan Jie. And so when I got to Beijing, everybody was always referred to by the hospital at Quan Jie. So just nicknamed that. You know, of course, all the streets have got different names now because of all the widening. But the Zong, let's get to the Zong, because if we can get past the Zong, we arrive at Jing Qi Shan. So the Zong, of course, they have the opposite reality of the Fu, that they are, it's our ability to transform what's in there. And so we have to hold it and do something with what's in there. And that's really key. And so holding is yin, moving is yang, and that's why the Zong are yin and the Fu are yang, right? And if we can think of it that way, then as we have substance organs and they're going to take something and sit with it in there and then draw out incredible nutrition from out the liver, or the lungs are going to pull out oxygen and get rid of other substances, that they're going to do something quite dramatic to our items, then we can say, is the breakdown in how, not what we put in our bodies, but then what did our bodies do with it? And then how did it process it out? And so how are the kidneys processing things out, as well as sorting? How are the lungs doing their job? And that helps us really understand that it's not as simple as eat a better diet and the Zong get better. You know, the Fu may benefit from a better diet, and the Zong will benefit indirectly if the absorption and then metabolism is there. But that's where we start to hit the metabolization of things. And so that's why it's deeper. And if they break down, then we really don't get much of anything. And that's an important way of looking at those yin organs, or the Zong, as they are deep. They are the metabolization of what we do with things. And therefore, they are feeding us in a way that macronutrition, what we put in our mouth, is not doing. And of course, the macronutrition is its fuel, and yet it's not as simple as put in, strip, break down, and prepare. That's what the Fu are doing and then processing out. These are where we're really doing the deep work that the spleen can do, that the liver can do, that the kidneys can process out, the lungs, the heart.
This may be going a little off the rails, but would this, and it's a little of a bit of a Western medicine idea, it's a completely Western medicine idea, but is this where like cellular metabolism comes into play?
You know, I've often wondered about that, because I plead great ignorance of Western medicine and tell people it's very dangerous. And yet I do a lot of reading, and I do pay a lot of attention to how the body works in Western medicine, because I do believe there's just medicine, not any medicine. Mm-hmm. And anything that enriches us and widens our understanding as opposed to narrows it is very helpful. And cellular metabolism, I do feel that there is a definite idea of processing, that deeper idea. And we can't stick it in the Zong, but I 100% believe that that is possible, because one of the things is that, you know, the Chinese are having fun with numbers, and it's important that there's not just five Zong and there's not just six Fu, because then they were like, there's more here, so let's call them extraordinary. You know, it's a little bit like the points. There's more than 365 points, but they were having fun with numbers. So then what do they call the extra points? Extra points. Okay, here's some extra points. But
it's what I love about Chinese. It's very straightforward.
Yes. I mean, they're having fun. And so the numbers were making sense to a pattern. And so when we talk about cellular metabolism, it is 100% that idea of what is happening at that osmosis level, what is happening, all of those lines. And we can't say it's a Zong, but it's definitely that yin aspect of work. So I don't have a good answer on that one, but I have certainly thought the exact same thoughts. Yeah. And I'd said, oh, well, then why can't we just say that's the San Jiao? But then, of course, that doesn't help your knee, your foot, and all the cells everywhere else in your body.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to, like, because I'm much like you. I think there's just medicine. People need different things at different times. You know, ideally, we're helping them with what we can help them with, and getting them to where they need to go if it's outside of our wheelhouse, so to speak. But I also like to sometimes look at these things and go, is there a correspondence? Is there a resonance? Is there something, you know, does it rhyme is often the way I think about it. Not that I'm looking for necessarily a one-to-one connection, but does it rhyme? Is it similar? Is there some way these things might be connected?
That's well put. I think that that's a good way of looking at it. It's, you know, you put two instruments together, and if they're in tune, it's great. And if they're not, they're not. And I agree. I think that I believe that as long as any particular medicine is focusing on the right track, then there's a definite correlation, whether I can see it or not. I fully recognize that there's a connection. You know, osteopathy, Chinese medicine, Western medicine, a lot of the way they're looking at things. As I'd said, I prefer to teach in Europe because how many of the people are MDs? And, you know, they will have seen things in acute situations in the hospital that make total sense to them for Chinese medicine. Because, you know, just in our practice over here, we may not see a way of a correlation.
Yeah, because we don't even see those patients.
We don't see the patients, and, you know, we aren't looking inside the body at the same time. And so, you know, a surgeon who looks and realizes that the uterus is completely white with no blood flow, you know, that's a pretty fascinating thing to recognize, that there's no flow here. And then that would help us understand why we might want to enliven blood and flow blood into an area. They just look at it as no blood's here. I definitely at some point look forward to being able to have more cross-medicine conversations with people that aren't based on this or that, but just, what are you seeing? What are you seeing in the body, and how do you explain that? And how do we see something, and how do we explain it, and get a mashing of ideas in a good way? I mean, that's the holy grail of all medicine, is to have smart people working together. And, you know, that's how the Neijing and all the books we respect is. They got a lot of smart people together and came up with some really good ideas.
Yeah. All right. So here we go. We've made it down to Jing, Qi, and Shen.
We have. And when I teach, I call this the three of change. And I've made that up. There's nothing in Chinese that is the three of change. In Chinese, it is Jing, Qi, Shen. Essence is Qi, spirit. And I've done this because it helps people understand that there's three. It helps people understand that we're talking about a change or shift. And also, it's nice when I teach to be able to go 10,000, 12, 7, 5, 6, 3, 1.
Ah, see, yeah, you like playing with numbers too.
I mean, why wouldn't you? And you know, if you spend enough time reading the Chinese books, it becomes fun. And then, of course, I mean, all fun has to have a source. And the source, of course, is Lao Tzu, chapter 42, Dao Sheng Yi, Yi Sheng Er, Sun Shang, San Sheng Wan Wu, or the Dao gives birth to one, one gives birth to two, two gives birth to three, and the three gives birth to the 10,000 things. So once we have three, we really have all things around us.
So the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is correct. The answer to the life, universe, and everything is 42. Just look in Tao Te Ching number 42.
Well, no, they got it mostly right. They were missing that the answer to life, universe, and everything is in chapter 42.
That's what I meant. He was pointing us in that direction.
That's it. you know, I mean, I grew up reading a whole lot of Douglas Adams, so we have to be careful not to get derailed into that wonderful world. But, you know, with the problem with so many things of today's world, whether you're Chinese, modern, or Western, modern, looking at books, is everybody quotes part of a chapter or part of a phrase, but they don't realize that the yin and yang is in the rest of it. And so everyone says, oh yeah, what, yi sheng wan, the three gives birth to 10,000. But the next two lines are really critical to us as medical practitioners. Wan wu fu yin er bao yang, chong qi yi wei he. And I translate this as the 10,000 things, they all carry yin on their backs and hold yang in their fronts. And it's when their qis collide, the yin and yang collide, that's when we are in harmony. And so if the yin is mixed in the yang, or the yang is mixed in the yin, that's when things are good. And when they separate, it's not so good. And I mean, it's a, you know, half the fun of geologicals, we get to have a little fun that we don't get to have when we're doing an official presentation, is I call this the Reese's peanut butter cup effect. Right? You got yin in my yang. That's right. You've got yang in my yin. Much healthier. And
yeah, two great tastes that taste great together.
That's it. And, you know, they work well together. Yeah. And so if we can just remember that three is critical, and that is where life really comes from, is the exchange of essences, chi, spirit. And, you know, not to get distracted in the Western medical world, but, you know, when the fetus is formed, the heart and the kidneys are next to each other, and then they move further and further apart as we grow. But that heart-kidney connection that is so strong in Chinese medicine really shows up right away in a fetus.
Yeah, it's in embryology. That's a fascinating. You know, are you familiar with Spark in the Machine?
No.
Oh, man. Yeah, there's a fellow, he's an acupuncturist, and he is a Western MD, Daniel, I always mess up his last name, book is called Spark in the Machine. And he looks at embryology and talks about how embryology basically explains Chinese physiology.
Fantastic. I'm very excited. That's an Amazon one click for me the moment we're done.
And if you go to Everyday Acupuncture, it's, I can't remember what episode it is off the top of my head, but I had an interview with him on Everyday Acupuncture. So it's over there as well. I can put a link to it on the show notes page for the listeners.
That'd be fantastic. So that magic of three, creation, you know, and what's kind of funny is it's this individual presence and yet group inseparability. And so are essences, chi, and spirit three different things that work together? Or are they actually one thing that we, in order for our limited minds, have to break into three parts to grasp? And that's half the fun of the essences, chi, spirit, right?
Yeah.
And so when we do that, again, that brings us to Lao Tzu, because everything really can come down to Lao Tzu when we start getting into this world. And chapter 14 has a good way for us to grasp this, the magnitude of the interconnection of form and function in a person. And chapter 14 is, 视之不见, when looked for, it's not seen. 听之不闻, when listened for, it cannot be heard. 博之不得, when reached for, it cannot be obtained. 此三者不可知解, these three things, one cannot seek to closely question or interview or try and understand them. 故混而为一, thus, they are mixed together, not as in we mix them together, but it's so convoluted that we see them as one. 生生不可名, its continuity or its constantness makes it unnameable. 富贵于无物, we categorize it as substanceless. So, given that we just can't figure out what this is, we give it this idea of substanceless. 是为无状之状. This is the form of formlessness. 无物之相. It is the shape of nothingness. And so this idea of jing qi shen is the moment that we say that semen is jing, we've missed chapter one jing that they're talking about for the health of the body, that this idea it's not nameable. That is a jing. Small jing, like the small idea of jing. But the jing that we're talking about is this, the reformed essences, that which allows the body to flourish. And so if we look at the zang as systemic, you could almost say that, oh, we're dealing with the endocrine system or that system or this system. The axis of three of jing qi shen is fundamental change. And that's key because it's universally encompassing for the person. Right, there's a fundamental change or shift, and a shift in any of the three affect the continuation cycle of all three, which is felt throughout the person, and a shift in any place in the person creates an effect on the jing qi shen. And it is important to grasp that there's what I call like the small or named and then the unnamed. And so if we say shen is spirit, and that it's critical, and then someone gets hit in the head and goes into a coma, and they're a vegetable, but they're alive, then there's an argument. Was it really necessary? And of course, if you remove all the feeding tubes, the person dies. So it is very relevant. It's just we've managed to circumvent certain aspects of the spirit. But that's small spirit. We're talking about how things are shifting in the body. And that's important to grasp, that there's a small and a big, just the way Jing could be semen, and it could be much more the refined essences of the body.
And does this touch in a bit on there's the stuff that we can name, and then there's the stuff that's not nameable?
You got it. And just because it's not nameable does not mean that we are ignorant or it's not there. It's just, it's really big.
Right. It's really beyond our abilities, human beings, to conceptualize, given the apparatus we have for understanding the world, which is glorious and opens a whole world to us, but it blinds us to so much other stuff.
It does. And I would say our method of apparatus is we are going to separate it into what we call Jing, Qi, Shen, or essences, Qi, spirit. But we're talking about something that is a cycle that feeds on itself, that is really important. And so we all learned that, you know, the Jing is that substantive matter of the body and that most refined essences that we need. And whether we think it's the sui, the marrow, or whether we think it's the vitamins and minerals coming out of the liver, or whether we think it's whatever's being produced, that is being produced. And then how it metamorphoses in through the system and gives us fuel, that's our qi, and how the qi sends it through the system and nourishes the spirit, and then how that spirit creates an environment that the body's happy to do work in, i.e. it's willing to create more essences or it's not willing to create more essences. So that's where we have a much more dramatic effect than a specific emotion or the motility of the fu or the function of a zang, is what is the overall arching person? And the person every day, they might have anxiousness, they might have stress, they might have joy, but overall, is their shun low? And therefore, things just aren't being made enough. Is their shun overall too active? And therefore, the yin is never being created because it doesn't get a chance to rest, or it's being burned up too much. And that's different than saying anxiety is bad for my health. That's in the seven emotion layers. We're talking about an overall spiritual presence that affects the environment, a little bit like living in the Pacific Northwest, is that regardless of whether I like rain or I don't like rain, it doesn't get a lot of sun for 9 months and it gets a lot of rain. Things that like that turn green and things that don't rot. And our shun is like that in a way of every person is living in a certain shun world, and that affects their jing. And their jing is living in a very specific world, how well it's working, and that affects the qi. And the qi is affecting how everything is working. And that's not the qi of I'm tired today, or I'm this, or I'm that. We're talking about a fundamental or constitutional nature, but can be shifted. And so if we can look at that, we're concerned. The way I try and say it, and it's a little confusing, but what we're concerned with is the direct yin and yang qualities of yin and yang.
That is so Chinese thinking.
It is. And it's just like, it's almost like a cop-out, unless you really can point out to how you do it in the clinic. And so what we're looking for is the separation or not of the clear and the turbid. And I didn't use the word damp. I'm definitely using qing and zhuo, or that clear and that turbid. Not shirqi, because that puts us up in the zang, that puts us in the fu, that puts us somewhere else. But just that separation or not of clear and turbid. And it's important to remember that they're not meant to be purely separated. They're just meant to have more of one or another in the system. And then how is that raising or lowering of yin and yang? And then how is the animation versus inertia, calmness versus agitation in the body? And that separation or not of the clear and the turbid, the qing and the zhuo, really defines the quality of our jing, that which nourishes everything. Did it get properly separated? Did it get overly separated? Did it get under-separated, the clear and the turbid? And then who cares if it's separated or not, if the raising and lowering through the qi function in the body is not working? And so if the yin is not reaching the head and the yang is not reaching the feet, we're going to have problems, but not channel, right? We're talking about something a bit deeper here. And that's the qi layer. And then that animation versus inertia, calmness versus agitation. Again, not an emotional daily state, but something much deeper. That's the shun aspect. And so when I'm working in the clinic, I really am trying to pay attention to where is the illness. And if I see that, you know, the person's basically healthy, but for some reason, overall, their health is not changing, or they have a condition that doesn't go away, but they're pretty well balanced, or they, yes, they have lots of anger, but that doesn't match the illness they came in with. And then I say, okay, so they have anger as well as there's some sort of deep misfunction in this cycle of clear, turbid, raising, lowering, agitation or calmness. Animation versus inertia is probably a safer word to use. And, you know, the truth is any good treatment usually requires what I colloquially call a judo flip, or what I call a fulcrum of three. I love the number three, just by the way.
I noticed that.
And so, you know, with a judo flip, you got to pull the hand, you got to kick the leg, but if you don't have the hip in there as a pivot, they don't go very far.
So you need some kind of a pivot. Wait, is this open-close pivot that you're talking about?
It's just understanding that my when I give a treatment, I have to yank, kick, and flip. I can't just do one thing and expect it to work to the point where I can get to 7 out of 10. Because that's really what I try to get to, is I'm really striving to be a 7 out of 10 practitioner. And, you know, direct yanking or direct kicking works if there's excess or just deficiency and you can drain or you can tonify. But, you know, people are coming in with a mix where there's some problem in the seven emotions and that's affecting the foo. So they've got GERD. But on top of that, there's a listlessness or a dysfunction in the essence's chi spirit. And so I have to figure out in my treatment, how do I help one do the other and flip so there's a change that happens? And, you know, when we talk about essence's chi spirit, that's the medicine or the level where if a person goes through a transformational health change through adopting a meditation or a chi practice, it could be Chinese, it could be Indian, it could be somatic, wherever it's from, or they embrace religion, they find their God or their gods, whatever it is, and they undergo a deep transformation that has no direct line to their illness, and yet the body shifts at an essence's chi spirit, and then their illness goes away. And that's what we're talking about with essence's chi spirit, is I can't just add some danjuye and think I'm going to calm the spirit of essence's chi spirit. I can't just drain Neiting or Tai Chong, stomach 44, liver 3, and think I'm going to pull out some heat from that shun or affect the transformation. We're talking about something a bit deeper than being able to directly create a straight line in our mm-hmm. treatment.
So is this, if you're working with this level, Jin Shi Sun, mm-hmm. is it you, the practitioner, that's working with it, or is it the patient who needs to do the work at this level?
Well, it's tough because this level is the only person who can be intentionally strategizing is the practitioner, but they can't directly affect it. What they can do by directly strategizing is how do I put my patient in a place where they can unintentionally do the work mm-hmm. to shift? If I say, listen, you need to go find God or do Qigong and that will help, they're going to get intellectual about it and it may or may not.
Or they're going to tell you to buzz off, don't tell me what to do.
Exactly. Whatever the issue may be, it's the shift that happens without us being aware mm-hmm. of it. And a patient can say this will help me, but there's no guarantee it will unless they're able to hit that non-naming state and allow things to shift overall.
Okay, so I've noticed that there are times I have patients come in and I ask them, how are you doing? I always like to start off very non-afferent, so to speak. How are you doing? How's your week been? And sometimes they'll say, well, I think it's a little better. And that means one of two things. It means nothing has changed and they're being nice. Or sometimes it means everything has changed. They've completely forgotten that they had the problem.
Yin and yang.
They fall into this natural state of being that's natural. And they even forget that something had brought them to my office in the first place. So, I mean, I have chewed on this one for a long time. It used to drive me crazy. It's like, how could you not recognize you're not waking up three times a night to pee, that you're actually sleeping through the night? How could you miss this? And over time, what I've come to is that because they just fall back into a into their own natural state, you know, it's sort of like that, and I can't quote the line directly, but it again, it's from the Tao Te Ching, right? We're talking about Tao Te Ching, where, you know, the ruler that rules best is where the people go, we did it ourselves.
You got it.
And it seems that this level of healing sometimes is, it's something that they do. It returns them to a natural state. So there's no big, you know, fireworks or falderall about it. You just get back on with life.
And you are 100% correct, which is why I keep meticulous notes, particularly that first intake. Mm-hmm. And then I'll go, okay, well, let's see where we've come. And I'll go back and I'll read them their first intake. And they go, oh, yeah, oh, wow, I'd forgotten. Mm-hmm. I didn't know I had that. And I really, you know, it's chapter 17 in the Tao Te Ching that you were just quoting. And I really think it's so important that if in the perfect world we reach a place where the patient gets better and we don't get the credit, and yet they think it was just them. And that's the highest level of medicine. And, you know, when I stress to patients and to people I'm training that, you know, the body is not designed to heal. The body is designed to survive. And the greatest survival mechanism we have is denial and forgetfulness.
Oh, wow. Oh, boy.
And so if we can deny and survive a few more days, a few more weeks, a few more months. I mean, how does a person who was 117 pounds at 20 end up being 350 pounds on an oxygen cart in Walmart and not at some point have looked up and been, you know, I bought triple XXXX shorts. Maybe there's something wrong. How could they deny that they can no longer wipe their own rears? And yet, they don't, at no point did any warning flags go up. The ability for us to blind ourselves to what's happening is incredible. And the ability to forget bad things once they're over is a wonderful survival mechanism. You know, we're almost out of time, I know.
Well, we can take a little more if we need it.
Well, after Essence's Chi Spirit is what you've just touched upon into a degree, because the next layer is the Yuan Qi. And the Yuan Qi, there's no way for us to really know it. And there's no way for us to say it is something. And, you know, crash speed is the Yuan Qi is that governing force in the body, is how I like to view it. And so I view it as, if the Yuan Qi is home and paying attention, everything runs fine. And then we'll catch colds, we might get angry, but overall, the system runs fine. And if the Yuan Qi is not present, or it's weak, or it's ignoring places, then something's going to go wrong. And cancer is a great example. Incurable diseases are a great example. Because how is it possible for something to start to manifest, compost, and grow in the body, and our body not be like, hey, you're not supposed to be here? And, you know, Western medicine will say, oh, it's very fascinating that the cancer cells are secreting, mimicking things so you don't recognize them. But I'm sorry, the body's really smart. The spirit is smart. It's going to know something is there unless it decides, I don't want to deal with that. And it just avoids it. And given not being focused on, then it gets a chance. And I describe it as like parents. Parents are in the house and your child is going to be your child. I mean, we have three kids. So, you know, I really pay attention to this. And we can come up with all sorts of rules, and we can be strict, and we can be fair, and we can be fun. And that's sort of the daily. That's the 12 channels. That's the Zang. That's the Fu. That's the seven emotions. But overall, we create a certain qi to our house, the Yuan Qi of our domicile. And our children end up following certain rules, not because we've yelled at them, but because that's the chi of the house. You know, they're not going to stick something on a nice wooden table without a coaster. They're going to be put things away. They're going to be clean. They're not going to be clean. They don't need to clean things up here. But overall, there's an accepted, what's accepted in our house and what's not. And if parents stop paying attention, or the parents vanish completely, what's going to happen? And do the kids run amok? And they end up throwing wild parties, and they end up going crazy. And that's autoimmune overreacting in the system with a lack of governance. Or is it going to become listlessness and they're going to start eating things out of the pantry? The milk goes bad in the fridge, but no one throws it away. So now you got a sour smell all through the house. Cockroaches start coming in, rats make the house, and their house becomes infested and grows gross things. That's cancer. And if we can realize that if our body, our essence is chi, spirit, all of that, overall, there's a governing force. And that force is the yuan qi. And there's no way to directly communicate with the yuan qi. There's no point that I can hit and that's going to do something to the yuan qi. There's places where I stand a better chance. There's techniques that stand a better chance of awakening it, of having it shake a lethargy, of having it go back into governance. But that is when you work at the essence's qi shun, the essence, and then you work at the yuan qi level, that's chapter 17 of the Tao Te Ching. I mean, it's gong cheng shi sui, bai xing jie wei, wo zi ran, right? Done correctly, things fall into place. And the 100 families, that's the bai xing, all believe it was their way. And so they thought they did it. Like you said with that patient, like, oh, and they've forgotten everything because they're making shifts now on their own. You've awakened the essence's chi spirit three change of three axis. And now it's humming along that even though they have emotions, it doesn't affect their health. Even though they have an overly spicy meal, it doesn't rock their world. Their essence's chi spirit axis is strong. And the essence's chi spirit axis is strong when it's well governed by the yuan qi overall.
So it sounds like the yuan qi has incredible deep influence on our well-being, on our life, on our probably on our Ming for that matter, which would be a subject for a whole different show. And yet our ability to influence the yuan qi is tenuous at best. And yet as practitioners, we are at times called to be attentive to this. Have you got some suggestions or ways that we can think about how to work with this, how to help our patients sort of trip over it for themselves, if it were?
You know, that's such a great way to think about it. And, you know, in true Chinese fashion, the best way to work with the yuan qi is to first decide and realize that most of the problems we're dealing with aren't yuan qi issues. And then once we've addressed that, then we can say, all right, what is the yuan qi? And how do I not confuse this systemic deep thing that pervades everywhere in the body? I mean, it's our yin, it's our source. So it's this deep systemic pervasion of qi overall that doesn't move around like in a channel or in a line, but is just present. And how do we keep it present so that it doesn't ignore things and then we're prone to diseases, not like catching a cold, but say cancer, autoimmune, things like that. How do we not confuse that with daily health? And so being able to stop and say, okay, daily health is daily health. We're talking about an overall governance of the system. And, you know, when the yuan qi is in full health, all things in the body are humming along nicely. And then you get food poisoning. And if you get food poisoning and you do a yuan qi treatment, it's not going to stop you from vomiting and diarrhea.
Right. You got to hit it at the right level.
You got to get to the right level. And the first thing is to realize, are you even at the right level? And then even if you recognize that there's an essence's qi spirit or yuan problem, are what's going on at the seven emotions or at the 12 channels, they have such painful neuropathy that it overrides any place we can put them into. But if we can say we're going to get them to a place where we've removed enough negative influences, emotions, cold, channel problems, that we can tap into it, I describe it as, if I can get my patient into a state on the table where they're neither conscious and able to talk to me, but nor have they started snoring and are sound asleep. Mm-hmm. And that's very helpful as well, because if they go into that deep sleep, a lot of things will happen, but that's not going to fix the yuan. But when we can take them to that place that's right on that cusp where time disappears, they don't know if we've been on them for 20 minutes or 2 hours, and they're in this very, very deep place where the soma, the body, is fully relaxed. The seven emotions are no longer engaging. The small spirit, as in like our intellect, our brain, our thinking, is not thinking, and yet they're conscious. that state, if we can help someone to that place, that's when the yuan qi can suddenly say, okay, now I'm going to start trucking along the body. And that's when you can have what I call spontaneous healing. And spontaneous healing, what is Deepak Chopra? He's got his book, Spontaneous Healing. I mean, I haven't read it in 20 some years, but I remember reading it and thinking, oh, he's talking about what we call awakening the yuan qi. And spontaneous doesn't mean that like you had it today and it's gone tomorrow, but it means it goes away without any known understanding or logic. And that's the fun part about shifting essences, qi, spirit, and the yuan, is that we are shifting indirectly and yet profound things can happen that we just can't do any other way. And so it's, how do I manifest a state in my patient that they are conscious and yet not? I don't know how to say that better. I mean, do you have a good way of describing what I'm trying to say?
Describing this is difficult because words are useful up to a certain point. Here's what I know from my experience. There are times where the feeling in the room really shifts into something. I can feel it. The patient really settles and supples and softens. It's a palpable sense.
Yeah, it's a real place.
It's a real place. And often patients will come out of that and they'll go, oh, I had a nice little nap. Well, I mean, sometimes people do sleep, but I think people often will conflate a moment with the yuan qi as a moment of sleep. And I don't think it is sleep. It is something different. Something fundamental happens. I don't really have the languaging to talk about what happens. It's something that comes out of them.
And that's so true, is that in that state, and, you know, to touch it for a second is nice, but it doesn't give the body time to recognize itself. And I think that's what really, when I work at that yuan qi level, you know, especially when we're working with people who've been termed hospice or other incurable diseases, that once I've removed enough irritants in the other layers we described, the focus of our treatments is what we call, you know, getting the essences, qi, spirit, as well as, we call that a deep qi protocol, essences, qi, spirit. And then we move into a yuan qi protocol where we really are trying to, can I get them to that place for 5 minutes, 10 minutes? And then can I get their body aware of it, that they know they can be in that place? In which case it may happen while they are asleep, mm-hmm. or doing something else. And then the yuan qi suddenly says, you know what? The house needs governing. And the yuan qi is powerful. That's when incurable diseases suddenly disappear. And we call it a miracle. And, you know, the truth is that we could line up 150 people who need it and not hit 7 out of 10, 6 out of 10. And so it's, at least at my skill level, I cannot predict or force it to happen. But I can say that if you give me a patient who stands a chance of being cured of the incurable, this is the strategy that gives them the best odds of obtaining it.
Let me ask you a question about this. It seems to me at this level, the yuan qi, it cannot be commanded. You can't command it. Actually, it's the one that does the commanding. You can't command it. It can be invited. It can be invoked. I think there's ways of sort of, I don't know, waking it is not quite right either, because I suspect it's always awake. It seems to me invitation is for me the most powerful way of considering having a conversation with that part.
It is, and it does. And maybe it's, how do we create a place where the yuan qi engages back with the person or engages more? I don't know how to say it. I mean, I use awakening, but you're quite right. It's awake all the time. It's just, is it paying attention to all places at all times as it's supposed to? And that's an interesting idea of how do we engage it, invite it? How do we, I'd hate to use the word stimulate, because there's no direct line.
Yeah, no, there's no direct line. You can't stimulate it.
And so, I mean, if a person is very, very depleted and their life force is about to go, and you do a ton of moxa on Guanyuan, Ren 4, Qi Hai, Ren 6, we can say we awoken the Yuan Qi, they felt better. But it's not the same thing. What we're trying to get our way around, and of course, the way to recognize it is that all we can do is create a space for it to say, huh, all right, I'm going to pay more attention. And then either it will or it won't. And if it does, the incurable gets a chance to be cured. And if it doesn't, then it doesn't. And our job is, as you said, is there's no way to do a direct poke, but how do we create the opportunity for it while not confusing that with, I need to specifically treat something in another layer, because I can do all the Yuan Qi protocols I want and that won't help a problem that's in the seven emotions or in the channels or in the Zangfu.
Yeah, I mean, as we started the conversation, it's really helpful to be attentive to where is the problem? How do we know that the problem is here, and what can we do to help it at that level, and not to confuse the levels, right?
There is. And, you know, most illnesses, they have, you know, there's parts in several different levels. And so we have to figure out, you know, when you're untying a knot, what strings do you pull first? And, you know, that's the key. You know, we really pride ourselves on working very fast in our clinic and getting tangible results very quickly for patients. But there are certainly conditions that they're not going to be better next week. They're not going to be better in three treatments or be cured in three treatments. But what I'll tell them is that no matter what, it's like going for a long hike. At any moment, you should stop, turn around, and see how far you've come. And there's no such thing as I treat you for 6 months and you don't get anywhere. And then at 5 months, 29 days, all of a sudden something changes. And that's when we're working in those other layers, is it should be a tangible progress that's markable. And the patient feels comfortable paying me money continuously to keep them on their hike of getting better. But Yuan Qi, that's something else.
that's a whole different thing. Andrew, as ever, a delight to sit down for some tea and some conversation with you. Thanks so much for making the time today.
Oh, I really appreciate you giving me a chance to talk on two different topics, even though way back when we talked about one. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, the way this kind of stuff goes, we'll probably have to pick up and talk about another, because you clued me into something here that I hadn't thought about until today's conversation, which is taking a look at the Tao Te Ching as a book about medicine. Oh, man, I hadn't thought about that.